Hello, friends. It me, Bethany Rutter, and I'm here with my good friend and business partner.
It me, Alice Slater.
And we're here with yet another episode of What Page Are You On? How are you today, Alice?
It's bright and early, and I'm feeling great. How are you?
I am good.
Well, I will say it's actually 9:30. Yeah. But also, to me, that feels early.
It's not that bright. I woke up this morning, and it was misty and atmospheric, and I thought, I may be in Forest Hill, but I could be in Forks, Washington.
Loved that segue.
Because we're not going to beat about the bush and talk about what we've been reading this week, because we've had our eyes singularly on the prize of another episode of our little, you know, series that we're doing at our own pace and our own time to our own, you know, marching to the beat of our own drum regarding some of the biggest selling books of all time. Alice, what are we discussing today?
Today we are discussing Twilight.
By Stephanie Good old Meyer.
Everyone knows that. We don't need to say it.
True.
Okay, so Twilight. So, first of all, Bethany, had you read Twilight before, and had you watched the movies? Did you have any idea what you were going into?
Yes, I had. I believe I've seen the first film. I had not read the book, but I believe I've seen the first film. Or at least, if I haven't, I feel like I have, because I know it all.
It's so prevalent in popular culture.
Yeah.
It's kind of hard to remember what you've actually seen and what you've just absorbed by via the, like, platform of memes and TikToks and all that stuff.
True. What's your background with this artwork?
I will tell you. So, I feel like I definitely read it when I was in my sort of early to mid-20s. And I recall thinking it was fine. / quite enjoying it. I found it very compelling. Because I hadn't seen the film. It wasn't like Internet culture wasn't where it is now, so I wasn't being exposed constantly to the fandom stuff and memes and that kind of thing. So I quite liked it. My opinion has changed.
Okay.
I feel like I have more to say now than I did however many years ago, 10 to 12 years ago. And then, yeah, I've seen the film probably, like, at least 4 times.
What?
I don't know. You know what? Because it just, you know, it tickles me. It just tickles me.
I would actually quite, do you know what? When I was reading the book, I was like, I actually kind of wish I'd just watched the film.
I'm gonna say it. I think this is a classic example of the film being better than the book.
Or at least more and entertaining.
Like, yeah, because there's stuff in the film that's obviously really shit. Like, the sparkly skin effect is hilarious. There's other bits as well. Like, obviously, it's not in the first one, but the little robot baby. Yeah. Have you seen that? Renesmee?
Yeah. I'm hilarious. More familiar with the robot baby.
There is comedy value there. Do you know what I mean? I'm getting bang for my buck, even though, you know, even though you can't really take it seriously. You don't need to take it seriously. It's hilarious. Whereas I feel like with the book, you can't, there's not as much, I don't find it as funny, you know?
No, I mean, it's incredibly, like, straight-faced, isn't it? It's really, I don't know, yeah, it's...
Okay, talk me through your reading experience.
So, grudgingly, I used an Audible credit to read this in advance of this podcast, and I started listening to it, and I, gotta say, was not having the time of my life. And then I realised there was a function that I've never used before on Audible or on any podcast app, any listening service in my life. I used it for the first time, which is listening to my audiobook at faster than 1 speed. So I attempted to listen to it at 1.5 speed, but that just sounded completely insane and I could not do it.
No, so you can't just go from 0 to 1.5. You have to microdose.
So I settled on 1.3 as the optimum speed until I got to the end where I was so bored that I just had to do 1.4 to get it over and done with. So yeah, that's how I listened. That's how I consumed this book, was very grudgingly and without great joy, unfortunately.
So you inspired me, because I personally just listen at 0 speed. There's definitely one book that I listened to at like 1.3 because I couldn't quite get to grips with how slowly the narrator was reading. Mm. I can't remember what that was, though. Whereas, yeah, with this, I found I can't just hop straight into 1.5, not just because it's quick, it's because the sound quality suffers. You lose a lot of the kind of inflection when you're going that fast. So yeah. I have to start off, every time I'd like ease myself in, like getting into it, like the hamster pond, you know, like start at 1.1, a few minutes there, like get, and then eventually you have to get your shoulders under and go all the way to 1.5. But so by true. Then you're kind of used to it. But basically, okay, let me give you some Twilight facts that might help us make sense of this book,
please, because I'm relying on you and your bookly wisdom to help me understand what happened here.
Like, as in, like, how did we end up where we are?
Yeah, well,
this story is gonna blow your mind if you haven't heard it before. So as we live and breathe, Twilight has sold over 100 million copies in total. That's across the whole franchise, which includes 4 books in the original Twilight series, a couple of spin-off novels, a gender-swapped version, and Midnight Sun, which is from Edward's perspective. So there's quite a few books, but that's a huge number sold.
All of which are written by the bitch herself.
Yeah, there's no... She has no ghostwriters or anything involved, or, you know, fanfic turned good. So basically, the concept came to her in a dream on the 2nd of June 2003. Remember that date, all right? Because that's important.
Okay.
And basically, she had this dream about a human girl and a vampire who were in love in a field. And the vampire was in love with her, but thirsting after her blood. So there's this conflict inside him, whether to destroy her or love her. And she basically woke up from that dream, took her children swimming, then wrote the whole thing down. And she says that she describes chapter 3 when they're in the meadow. Having that conversation is basically her dream wholesale, which is usually a bad idea in fiction, but she went for it. Anyway, 3 months later, she had written 130K. Mad. So June 2nd, she had the dream. By the end of August, she had written 130K. So that's basically like, what, 40K a month? Which, you know, I mean, I know you write really quickly, but that's Jesus web, that's with 2 small children as well.
I was going to say, I also have no dependents, so I got nothing else to do but write.
Yeah, and she basically, she described it as like, it was just in her head constantly. She was struggling to sleep because the characters were just constantly, she was constantly coming up with new ideas, having conversations in her head, and she was terrified of losing anything. So every time a scrap came to her, she was writing it down, regardless of the time of day or whatever. So anyway, in this fever dream, she wrote the book. So 3 months later, she was sending chapters to her sister as she was writing. So her sister was reading it, like, live. And by the time she'd finished it, her sister was like, you absolutely have to try and get this published, which apparently hadn't even occurred to her, which also blows my mind. I'm like, imagine writing like that without the aspiration of actually sending the book anywhere. Anyway, so she did. And basically, long story short, within 3 months of finishing the book, when she ended up with an 8-way auction and sold it for $750,000 in a 3-book deal to Little Brown. And bear in mind, that's 750K in 2003. So basically, a fucking huge deal. I mean, that's a huge deal now.
Yeah.
But, you know, we're nearly 20 years later. So, yeah, a huge amount of money. So basically, from her dream on the 2nd of June to signing the deal was a 6-month process.
That's wild.
Isn't that insane? I can't believe it.
Yeah.
6 months with no words to a sold book.
For tons of money.
So that's kind of basically the story of Twilight in a very brief nutshell. I also didn't love it, and I have some stats which I think do a good way of explaining why I didn't love it.
Tell me.
Which I'm going to share with you. Okay, the phrase crooked smile.
Oh my God, I'm so glad that you said that. Because I was like, okay, so he's beautiful and perfect, but his smile is repeatedly described as crooked. What is this?
Okay,
what does she think?
What are you picturing when you hear the phrase crooked smile? Because ordinarily I would picture crooked, yeah, like crooked teeth.
Yeah.
But then I realized in this reading, I started imagining the what's her name from Dawson's Creek? The one who was married to Tom Cruise.
Katie Holmes.
Yeah, you know that little sideways smile she does, you know?
Yeah. Okay, fine, I accept it. Maybe that's what she means.
Anyway, that appears 9 times, which I actually think is quite modest compared to some of the other phrases that I'm going to share. The next one, you requested smirk.
Yep.
That's only 12.
Okay. There's another one that I'd like you to do that if you do not present now, I will request, because it was driving me completely crazy by the end.
Okay, I'm excited. I have 2 more. I have shrug at 24.
That's a lot.
And then I have chuckle. Are you ready for this? 39 times.
Oh, my God.
They're fucking chuckling all over the place. And honestly, it's not that funny of a book.
I was going to say, it's
serious moments.
It's the driest book I've ever read, so I don't know why anyone is chuckling.
The driest book I've ever read! Yeah, hit me. What do you want me to do?
Snicker.
Oh, yes. Okay. Doodly-doodly-doo. I'm annoyed. If I had thought to do this as I was reading, I also would have kept track of how many times Bella's clumsiness is mentioned.
Oh my God, we're coming to that.
Okay, snicker slash snickered comes up 12 times.
That's
so it's equals
many.
Equals with smirk.
Yeah.
And this is the thing, is obviously, I don't know, like, for a term like shrug, right? I mean, for me, that's one of the no-no words. I don't think about it when I'm writing, but when I finish a draft, I control F and check how many shrugs are in there. How many nods, how many grins. In fact, let's check grin. I don't think grin is in that often. But I check it and cut as many as possible.
Grind dialing down, yeah.
Oh, my God. Oh, no, because grin includes grinding and chagrin. But we're still in the 50s.
Yeah, grin. I mean, that's a lot.
It's just insane. It's too many. So the writing is just incredibly repetitive. And, you know, when you're looking at, when you're in that world for 130,000 words, that repetition becomes really boring to read.
Yeah. And then, you know, obviously, when you know you've got, like, a guaranteed smash hit on your hands, who cares? Like, you know, like, from a kind of editorial point of view, I just feel like they're not going to be expending hours of labour on making this something that it's not. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, sure. And, like, it's something that I think when I first read this book in my 20s, I don't think that I was particularly tuned into the repetition. I don't think I really cared. I was very much swept away by the story, and the writing was kind of second fiddle. Although, what I did do, when I read it back then, I read it on my Kindle. And I'm obviously read the same. I switched between audio and Kindle because I can read faster than 1.5 speed. But by doing audio, I could listen at times when I wouldn't normally read. I still have all my old highlights. So I've highlighted lines that I thought were particularly nice. And that was very strange because I picked out words that now I don't think that I would necessarily
notice or respond to.
Yeah. So I'm going to share my words with you. I highlighted peripheral peak. Pariah, obsidian, describing Alice's hair, I think, seraphic, ingenue, leonine. And I do think these are quite a nice selection of words.
Yeah.
The shoulders of his shirt were stained with rain. He stepped on the heels of his boots to take them off. There's elegance to it.
Yeah, I mean, it's not 100% pure garbage. My problem with this book, I don't think it's like bad. Like, I wasn't, like, necessarily laughing at it the way that maybe I would respond to something like 50 Shades of Grey with all the silly turns of phrases, you know, like my inner diva and stuff like that. I just thought it was so boring. I was really, I don't really remember the film that well, and I was really taken aback by how boring the plot of Twilight is and how little action there is until the last 20% maybe. And then it really just goes from, like, 0 to 100, literally in the space of the silly baseball scene. The classic, iconic baseball scene.
I knew there was, when I was talking about bits in the film that are better, despite also being hilarious, and it's baseball, thunderstorm baseball to supermassive black hole. Yeah, that, we've discussed that off pod already. I showed Bethany the gif of Alice pointing her little toe before throwing the ball. It just does something to me, mate. It just tickles me.
And it completely justifies the existence of the band Muse.
Now we know where Muse came from, like what their purpose was.
Why they exist. Why they
put
on God's green earth.
Oh, it kills me. I can't imagine that scene with any other song, even though in lockdown, my husband and I decided to watch, out of sheer desperation for some kind of serotonin, we thought it'd be fun to watch Twilight. And it was hilarious. But when Supermassive Black Hole came on, I levitated. I don't think I've ever been more entertained in my entire life. So good job. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, like, done to it was perfect. But yeah, like, do you understand what I mean about it being dry and boring?
Yeah, because even the baseball scene in the film, the whole purpose of the baseball scene is essentially just a setup to bring the baddies. So it precludes this like meeting. In the book, even the baseball is so boring without the like heady beats of news to keep me going. It's really dull reading. It wasn't particularly gripping for me because there's nothing at stake. And I think that was my beef with most of the book, is that there never really feels like there's much at stake. Like, obviously, until like that last 20%, you know that Edward and Bella, because of the nature of the book, are going to have a romance. A kind of rivalry with Jacob isn't really as prominent in the book until the very end. Although I feel like I've experienced this rereading as like a fever dream, and I've forgotten a lot of detail already.
No, it's true. And I do, what I feel with this book is it is quite boring, but I see it primarily, one, as a vehicle for adaptation to film, and two, as setting up other books in a series. So it's weird, like, it's interesting if she felt like this was a fully formed thing, because it kind of reads to me as like explicitly an establishing medium.
So according to the FAQ on her website, she had no intention of writing sequels until she got to the end. And you know, the epilogue is the prom scene.
Yes.
Well, she kept writing epilogues until she realized, actually, maybe I've just got a second book in me.
Yeah, I just feel like it's so transparently setting up further stories that I'm shocked that it was not conceived that way. So yeah, that's what I think I can look at it more generously as a boring piece of media if I accept it as, you know, a thing to be adapted to screen, and B, a thing that sets up future stories. Like, that is a way that I can, like, accept it more for what it is. Because otherwise, I was just like, I think the other problem is, as a reader, like, especially a reader in big 2021, and I don't know how far it could have ever got in its life cycle without this being the case for most readers, you know that he's a vampire. So it just feels like such a waste of time. Like, all of the, you know, it's basically like halfway through before she finds out he's a vampire. So there's just something, I don't know, it just, there's something about it that means that I'm just like, okay, come on, let's get to the plot. Like, let's get going. Whereas I know that that's not necessarily how like fiction works. I just think I expected, for a kind of blockbuster book, I think maybe for me, the blockbuster kind of YA books that I really liked and still, you know, in my mind have fond memories of are Hunger Games, which is very action-y from like the beginning. And there's a lot at stake. You understand exactly what is at stake. It's very life or death from, you know, kind of from the beginning. So I think, yeah, I was just a bit taken aback at how slow this was.
And I guess part of the problem is often with like supernatural storytelling is how you get that balance between what's a kind of believable, realistic arc for the characters to go from normal life to the disruption of discovering that you know, the supernatural is real. Yeah. To what, to the, you know, like, to what's a reasonable pace for the reader. And yeah, I often find I'm quite impatient. I feel like if I know that I'm reading a vampire story, I don't want to get halfway through. Although, to be fair, I think I actually felt like she realized he was a vampire, or she accepted he was a vampire way too quickly. They didn't actually discuss the fact or confront it until quite a long time after that.
Yeah.
Which is what I found really strange. Like, she sits with it reasonably comfortably for quite a while. Whereas, I mean, I know that this is just a trope in romance novels, which is, I don't read them, I don't particularly vibe with it. But I could not believe that they didn't kiss till over halfway through. I think we're like 60% through.
Yeah, I 100% agree. Yeah.
Like, painfully chased. painfully chaste.
I'm going to ask you, as the oracle of Stephanie Meyer, is she religious? Like, is there a thing that would mean that, like, she would want to explore teen sexuality through this lens? Like, what?
Honey, she's a Mormon.
Okay.
She's a Mormon. So I feel like there's always been a conflict with Twilight, because when it came out in 2003, 2004, whatever year it was, lots of Christian America freaked out over it because of the demons, and you've got, you know, quivering girls and sexuality and blossoming love. But it's written from she's a Mormon. And once you know that she's a Mormon, that chasteness actually makes sense. Mm. Some of the, like, the choices in clothing make sense. Like, a few things click into place. So yeah, I feel like it's simultaneously too raunchy for big sects of Christian America, but also way too chaste for contemporary
actual teenage
YA readers.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, that's the other thing as well, is that obviously can we argue that Twilight kicked off YA as we know it?
I feel like it did, yeah.
I feel like Twilight set us up and then John Green knocked us down, you know?
Mm.
Like, Twilight spawned the kind of dark romance, epic, multi-book fantasy side of YA. John Green introduced, or popularized, obviously, the kind of contemporary sort of real world IMO. And bear in mind, there's like a 10-year gap between those two. Like, between the first Twilight book and the first John Green book.
Fascinating.
Yes. So I know that this is kind of almost a cliched discussion point when talking about Twilight, but can we talk about A, Bella's clumsiness, and B, how that is used as a vehicle for Edward to be really gross and abusive?
I literally could not believe that I was reading a book where the protagonist's fatal flaw is that she is clumsy. Like, I literally cannot cope with that. But I read it anyway, and that is my cross to bear. Every time it was mentioned, I was like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, is this for real? And yeah, it's for real.
I'm going to say, based on the stats we have, I reckon a reminder that Bella is clumsy is probably maybe 25 times.
Yeah.
At least.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And that's like, yeah, that's in relation to sports, dancing, walking, existing, like everything.
And also other characters affectionately referring to her clumsiness. Whereas actually in the actual text, I think she bumps her hip once and then she breaks her leg at the end.
Yes.
Like, it's not like she's constantly fucking slipping and sliding her way through the whole thing like she's in a Tom and Jerry cartoon.
Yeah.
Like, she's basically fine.
Have you in your life ever met someone like this? Like, do people like this exist? Like, can you think of someone that you'd be like, oh yeah, that's my clumsy friend? Like,
yeah, is this a thing? And they have dyspraxia.
Yeah.
Like,
okay.
My husband is incredibly clumsy, but he doesn't actually injure himself. He stubs his toes a lot, but he has dyspraxia and he smashes things all the time. Like, he breaks cups and glasses and bowls and plates and things. And I guess that's the thing, is that, like, I think Bella's clumsiness, I think the issue is that it's only present because she's telling us about it. There was no kind of subtlety or intrigue to that. Not that I expect that to be an intriguing plot line, but the way that it's mentioned, you'd think that it would be more relevant. And I do think that it's only there to serve as a way for Edward to be protective over her beyond.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, because I guess it's not so much that I don't believe that clumsy people exist. It's more that, like, it's so transparently a vehicle for something else in this book.
You know, she's the kind of person that if she was real, we would say being clumsy isn't a personality.
Yes.
You know? And so, speaking of Edward, let me read this quote to you, because this took my breath away, and I don't think that you'd be able to get this in a contemporary YA if you had a discerning editor. Okay, in fact, I have two quotes. I have two. The first one... Okay, so I think this wouldn't be edited out, but I think this was just one example that I plucked out. But if you don't want to be alone with me, I'd still rather you didn't go to Seattle by yourself. I shudder to think of the trouble you could find in a city that size. Controlling, weird. That happens right after she gets stalked by the dudes in
the group of guys
Port Angeles.
Yeah.
So there is context to that, but horrible. And then this at the very end, so spoiler alert, but when they get to prom, this other dude had expected to bring Bella. I can't remember exactly how it happens because this.
I remember how it happened. Unfortunately, I have a very clear memory of this terrible book, but. He asks her to go to a dance earlier in the year. She turns him down because she's going to Seattle, maybe with Edward. Yeah. And she says, but you can take me to prom instead or something like that.
Oh, that's how it comes okay.
out. Yeah.
So he has a legitimate belief.
Expectation.
That...
Yeah.
Yeah. So Edward says to him, to be perfectly honest, she'll be unavailable every night as far as anyone besides myself is concerned. No offense, and I'm sorry about your evening. So he says that on the phone. I mean, it's just really horrible.
Yeah.
She'll be unavailable every night as far as anyone besides myself is concerned.
I think that's what I struggle. And it's obviously such a, like, obvious criticism to make of it, but just how that is posited as being, like, the height of romance in a book that's targeted at teenage girls. Like, and I get how... teen girls could fall for this shit, and that's, you know, completely the intention, but it is very dark.
Yeah, well, because I think the reason why I think teenage girls fall for it is because teenagers are horrendous communicators. All you ever really want as a teenager is someone to very clearly and unequivocally tell you that they like you.
Like they like you, yeah.
Yeah, and you do not get that. You do not get it verbally, you do not get it physically, you do not get it in any kind of emotionally believable, stable manner. So someone behaving in this fashion, it's so definitive and sure. I can see why teenage girls loved it. Mm. And of course, as a teenager, you don't have the experience to recognize these kinds of red flags of controlling behavior. You have no idea. You don't have that in your toolbox yet. But yeah, to have it presented in fiction in this manner, I don't like it. I don't like it.
I do not care for it. Yeah, there was just so many bits where I was like, I personally, as a 32-year-old adult woman with a life, don't find this romantic, but I totally get how a teen girl could be sucked into this and think it's the most romantic thing ever.
Yeah, I couldn't pick out a single moment that I thought was romantic, apart from maybe the moments that before they kiss, they do a lot of nuzzling. And I was like, I can get into nuzzling. I can see why that's horny.
So there's a bit where Bella tells Edward she loves him for the first time, and his response, I can't remember exactly what he says word for word, but given that, like, that is such a huge moment for, you know, teens, and you're often met with some kind of, like, disappointing or confusing or ambiguous response, his response is very, like, unambiguously, like, I will literally love you forever. I don't know if that's what he says, but I was like, yeah, I see how Edward Cullen is a more enticing prospect than actual teen boys.
Yeah. Or like Jacob. Let's talk about Jacob.
I am thoroughly team Jacob.
Oh, me too.
He seems more normal. Also, like, you know, werewolves are cool and he lives on a reservation. Cool.
He's painted as very young, isn't he? Like, he's a little bit younger than Bella. It's only right at the very end that she notices that he's got really tall. And, like, you know, he's blossoming into the man that he will be in New Moon.
Yes.
But how much do you know about the controversy regarding the use of First Nations tribes in Twilight?
Nothing. Please tell me.
So, when conceiving Twilight, Stephanie Meyer?
Maya.
When conceiving Twilight, Stephanie Meyer wanted to find a real life town to set the book in. She basically Googled the rainiest parts of America. Then once she found it was in this like belt through Washington state, she then wanted to find the perfect small town. It had to be a really small town that was very rainy. And she found Forks. Forks is a real place surrounded by woodland and it has a reservation. So that she was like, perfect. So she started researching the tribe that are based in the reservation near Forks. They're called the Quileute tribe. And she was really inspired by their mythology. So she used this real life tribe and their mythology to build on her fictional rendition of this like native community. And that's been really controversial.
One of the, until the end, which gets dramatic, the only bits of Twilight that I found actually really interesting were the vampire mythology and the stuff that Jacob tells Bella about what his tribe believes about vampires and, although he doesn't call them that, he calls them cold ones.
Amazing name. But here's the thing. So here is the issue. Well, one of many issues with it is that although she was basing a lot of the Quileute tribe's kind of mythology on a real tribe and their real cultural heritage, a lot of it was actually also made up. Mm. And this tribe only has 2,000 members at the time of writing of the piece that I've based this bit of research on. So it's really small, and it just meant that lots of people, not just Twilight fans, but, you know, this kind of conflation of real life and fiction has really kind of muddied the real history of this, or real cultural understanding of this tribe. Mm. So that alone was obviously really frustrating. And then also, I think, like, just the fact that they became part of this cultural phenomenon without their consent, they've received no reparations for that. That's insane. Reparations the right word?
Compensation. I don't
compensation,
know.
Yeah. So they received no compensation whatsoever, which, I, you know, I feel like even for 2003, I'm surprised that no one said, is it okay to use this real community?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't know what the world was like in 2003.
I don't know. I think about, like, the fact that, I mean, I don't know, okay, completely the first example off the top of my head, the fact that Donna Tartt didn't set the secret history at Bennington. She created a fictional university rather than use a real place. Like, I think in fiction, we so often are inspired by the real world, but cover our tracks. And obviously, even that, some people, of course, would argue that that's still not okay with First Nations communities, but
I mean, be embarrassed to make up a Native American tribe. Do you know what I mean? Like, to me, that may be more embarrassing than basing it on a real one. I don't know.
Then I suppose the next question is, do they have to be Native American?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
100%, like, yeah.
Maybe is if that that's
so
not
crucial, yeah.
An acceptable thing to do either.
Just don't fucking do it.
Yeah, perhaps that's the answer. But yeah, I thought this was really interesting. And now, I have read one article on this subject, which I read at 9:28 while simultaneously listening to the prom scene on 1.5 speed. So that's why that's why my brain is like macaroni cheese. I have no idea actually how the Quileute people feel about this and how their feelings may have changed as the franchise grew in popularity. But I think it's an interesting discussion point, and I'd be very interested in reading more about it.
Yeah, no,
100%. As I slip down into the murky depths of a Twilight deep dive.
So something else that I know from Twilight mythology, but is not addressed at all in the first book, is the fact that isn't Jasper a Confederate soldier?
Yes, he is.
That's so weird.
Why the fuck would you make that choice?
It's definitely why.
I have absolutely nothing more on that. I don't know the context of it. I can't remember when it comes up. But yeah, that is true, and that is completely wild.
Like, why
are you doing that?
Why? Okay, fine. Just wanted to get that on the record as, like, a thing I don't fully understand.
Yeah, I guess, like, I'm sure that these things haven't gone by, like, without some kind of critical eye at some point or another. But I only really found out about that this year.
Mm.
You would think that would be something that people would mention quite a lot about Twilight, but never really comes up. Anyway, will you be reading the sequels?
No, but I might watch the films.
I will say that we watched the second film over lockdown, and it is unbelievably boring.
No!
Despite all the fun I had with the first movie, I think the first film's really funny. There's lots of, like, good times to be had. And what's his name? Edward Cullen. What's his name?
Robert Pattinson.
Very beautiful, very charismatic. That it's a good time. The second movie was just so boring. We could barely get through it. And that was the end of our fun. We thought that would at least keep us going for like 5 movies because Breaking Dawn split into 2.
You
want to
see the baby?
Yeah, exactly.
Baby.
Exactly. I just came from Renesmee. which let's also just take a moment to reflect on that ridiculous name.
Yeah, I can't.
Oh, Lord. Yeah, no, I think this is the end of my Twilight journey. I'm not interested in reading the gender-swapped version or from Edward's perspective. Like, the story isn't interesting enough for me to want to read different renditions of it.
Simply no. But one thing I will say is that consuming the book gave me an appreciation for how well cast the film is from the perspective yes. of the two main characters. Because, like, who better than a kind of rude and annoying sulky bitch than Kristen Stewart?
Yeah, agreed.
And then, like, I also think that Robert Pattinson also a very good choice visually. But, and I said this to you in the pub the other day, it also made me understand more why everybody looks like shit in the film. Because Stephanie Meyer's descriptions of people's appearances, like hair, clothes, skin, vibes, insane, like fully insane. And then all the filmmakers did was just interpret that faithfully. So that's why everyone's hair looks absolutely gross. That's why the eye, like the contacts are so insane on the eyes. And yeah, I just found that her descriptions of clothes, I was like, never in the history of the world has a dress looked like that. You are describing something that is literally impossible to exist. But
I mean, that's the prom dress.
Yeah.
If anything, I feel in the film looks more wacky.
Okay, cool. I will.
But it's, you know, when you understand, because she's a Mormon, so she's describing clothing through that lens.
Yeah.
You know? Anyway, I just thought of another word I want to check. Let's see how many times Twilight's in the book.
I only heard it once, actually. Once or twice.
So it comes up 4 times.
Okay.
And each time I was like, ah, that's the name of the show.
Yeah. You were the Leonardo DiCaprio pointing at the TV
meme. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Do you have anything more to say on this?
Not really. I wanted to get on the record. I think it's boring. The clothes are insane. It's well cast as a film. And I think it was the perfect vehicle for the film. Those are my 8 takes on this. Yeah, I think my main takeaway from this is that I was just surprised that something this popular was this boring.
Yeah, I mean, and I can only assume that it is age. That means that I'm not invested in the very chaste, very slow burn romance.
Knowing that it's like a Mormon thing means that the vampire-ness is also a really good stand-in for, like, bonking. So he can, like, bite her and make her a vampire instead of, like, virginity, which I assume yes. also comes in if they procure a baby later on. But that's actually a very convenient, like, stand-in.
Oh, I will just say that the way in which they have sex is completely... It's something else. Well, not so much the way they have sex, like, but what positions? Happens to Bella. No, he breaks her spine.
What the
And she
hell?
Ends up in a she ends up in a wheelchair for a while.
This is no, I can't. No, I'm done with this. I'm done.
Like,
I'm
like, what
done.
Are we? What are we saying, Steph? What are we saying about sex?
This is the most absurd way to do like an abstinence only sex education through your fiction. I hate it.
Oh, so, yeah, like, I hate it too. It was fun though.
Yeah. So I don't want. I just. As I was listening to it and I was not having a good time, I was like, I don't want to come across as just like being a hater because I'm a grown up, you know?
Yeah, of course.
And I don't value shit for and about teen girls, which obviously is not true because that's literally what I write many books about. But I just don't think this is good. I think it's really dry. And, you know, I was comparing it to our previous blockbuster that we read, which was The Da Vinci Code. I will say it correctly one time to prove that I can. But that is so, like, action-y. It's really, like, fun, silly, like, you know, it isn't the most well-written book I've ever read in my life. But it's just very, like, go, go, go. Loads of kind of weird, silly mythology and backstory. And, yeah, I think that's what I just expect from blockbuster books, is just a lot of stuff happening. You know, same with Hunger Games. Like, Hunger Games is such a page-turner. I remember, like, I vividly remember reading it circa 2012. Like, that's nearly 10 years ago. I still remember, like, where I was when I was reading bits of it.
Yeah.
And I cannot imagine, like, Twilight staying with me like that. It's just not exciting.
And I think that's the weird thing, is that certainly with Hunger Games, the trilogy, I remember buying the first one. I was a new bookseller in Walthamstow at the time. I bought the first one. I remember staying up till like 4 a.m. to finish it when I had work the next day. Went into work the next day and bought the next two, and basically read them in incredibly quick succession. And like, that's what I want from this kind of fiction. When I know that there's like four books, you want to be so drawn in that you end up having to buy at least two in a row because you know that you're going to smash through them so quickly. Like, that kind of, like, ferocious hunger to find out what's going to happen. But also, like, to be sunk into such a believable, interesting, and, like, exciting world.
Yeah. With tons of jeopardy as well. Like, you know, a lot to lose. Whereas in this, I'm just like, I don't really know who I'm meant to be invested in and why.
I think that I have specifically found this reading of Twilight more difficult because I'm simultaneously watching Squid Game.
Yeah, which is just obviously talking, like, about very Hunger Games adjacent in terms of, like, level of jeopardy and kind of.
Like, it's so gripping.
Yeah.
And there is so much emotion in it. Like, there is just so much at stake beyond, like, the ultimate price, which is, you know, life and death, but there is so much else going on. It's just so rich and complex, and you know, you can't compare a TV series to a book, particularly something like Squid Game to Twilight, but just having, like, going from extremely incredible storytelling to what I would describe as quite boggy, quite slow, it has definitely highlighted the flaws of the text, let's put it that way. And also, I can still think of Twilight generously. Like, this is a debut novel written by a mom with two kids. She wrote it in 3 months, like, and she's made her fucking, her money.
Enjoy your millions, Stephanie. Like, 100%, I'm happy for you. But I just don't think the actual product is that good.
Yeah, and I'm surprised. I guess I'm surprised by the longevity of it because... And I think that the casting of the film, the quality of the films, the casting, that has really kept, that's really what the fandom is about, in my humble opinion. Like, Twilight is so present on TikTok. And I'm not, like, I haven't fallen into Twilight TikTok by mistake. I'm firmly in cocktail and goth TikTok. But I am exposed still to, like, a huge number of viral Twilight TikToks. And there is still this, like, real passion for it, which I guess also is why, like, in this podcast, to me, almost doing a podcast about Twilight feels like low-hanging fruit. And for that reason, like, I don't think we'll ever be asked to do 50 Shades of Grey because there are funnier people than us who have done whole podcasts about it. Like,
yeah, there's no point. Like, I'm very clear on what the vibe of 50 Shades of Grey is, whereas with this, I don't feel like I was clear on how boring it was. Like, I went in with, like, an expectation of something that I did not get. Whereas with 50 Shades, I know it's just a redoing of Twilight, but with BDSM and, like, silly writing. Like, I would go in with bad intentions on that. Whereas with Twilight, to me, I was hoping for something like Hunger Games, which I obviously did not get.
Me too. I was looking forward to this, and I've read it before. I liked it first time around. And I struggle to imagine how I managed to get through it. And I do actually think that part of it for me is that audio, if I'm not that invested in audio, my mind wanders and I just don't absorb what I'm hearing in a way that I don't experience with words on a page. So perhaps the medium in which I imbibed affected my reading experience as well. Because up to that moment, up to the Port Angeles moment where they go to dinner in that restaurant, which, by the way, is a real restaurant. I read this great article about some honeymooners who went to Forks by mistake. They didn't realize it was the Twilight town.
Oh my God.
They went to that very restaurant. They asked for a recommendation somewhere like a garage or whatever. And the dude was like, oh, well, obviously you want to go to this Italian place. And not knowing the connection... It just sounds like the most surreal experience. It's really funny. Anyway, up to that point, I was quite enjoying it. I was like, yeah, the writing's kind of lazy and kind of repetitive, but I'm still invested. It just, I think from the moment between Edward and Bella having their connection, to the end. That middle act was just too nothingy.
Mm.
And it killed the vibe.
It did. I mean, I'm glad that we've done this. I'm glad that we're continuing our blockbuster loose series that we're doing in our own time. And it's spooky season, so it felt right to read it. But yeah, I was disappointed. So,
well, alas. we'll try and pick something more jazzy for next time. When we were talking, I was thinking maybe Hunger Games, but then actually I just don't know how much I have to say about Hunger Games.
I love it. Yeah, it's just a fun time. There's nothing really to say about, like, the writing or... Yeah, I feel like it's just fun and I enjoy it, but I wouldn't know how to talk about it from a critical point of view.
All right, well, we'll think on. If you have any suggestions, our friends at home, let us know.
And
also, so, if yeah, you... Please...
Yeah, you're probably about to say what I was going to say, so...
Yeah. I was just going to say, I'd love to know if you came to Twilight later in life, in the twilight of your lives, for example, as we did, let us know how you feel about it. Also, if you were a teen fan, let us know. Just share your thoughts.
Correction, this is not the twilight of our lives, because much like vampires, we are going to live forever, but I accept it.
It's also not the twilight of our lives because we're in our mid-30s.
Yeah.
I just thought it'd be a funny thing to say. So and it wasn't, clearly.
So, we will see you next week, and we hope you enjoyed this episode about Twilight, a book that I bet you never thought you would hear us talking about. Bye!
Bye!